Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. I recorded this episode a while ago, so since recording it, I wanted to add information before to help put a context. So some of what I describe is in my recent book, analyzing and trying to give an overview of what some would call cognitive dissonance as far as the behaviors of the U.S. empire and, in the general term, its citizens, how various atrocities can be overlooked or condoned, and principles such as freedom and democracy are touted as if they're, you know, holier than thou. So a few examples of, I call it nationalism, social status. And I explain that in the episode. So I don't need to go over that right now, but what I want to do is say that it's a variation. There are many, a phrase I do not like to use, but I'm going to use it because it comes to mind as most appropriate. There are many ways to skin a cat. So I'm going to mention a few here that recently have come to mind. One is the work of Sheldon Wolin, W-O-L-I-N. He has a book called Democracy Incorporated, and his basic thesis has to do with what's called inverted totalitarianism. So that gets into a whole history of totalitarianism, but in the gist of it is, instead of blatant histrionic and other such adjectives of leaders such as Mussolini and Hitler, what the U.S. has become is inverted totalitarianism, which it shows the same similar symptoms and signs, but there is no fanatical, that's the word I was looking for, fanatical leader per se that is guiding it. Rather, it is orchestrated by corporate takeover. In essence, the corporations have taken over the government, and so people barely notice. It's the faceless, the faceless face of who's pulling the strings at, say, Facebook or any other technology thing where you have to wait on the phone for hours or whatever. So the point is, it's inverted. People barely notice it because they're having a good time doing certain things. So it's sort of hidden. So that's his theory. And then another aspect, a fascinating interview with the Tucker Carlson, some show he does with a clinical psychologist, Matthias Desmet, who has written a book, which I'll be getting, The Psychology of Totalitarianism. And his basic thesis, from what I gathered from the talk, has to do with what he calls mass formation psychosis, which is how masses of people can seek solidarity in a collective, yet lacking actual individual nurturing relationships, and how they will sacrifice their own well-being for what they perceive as the benefit of the whole, even though that benefit may be tainted. Thus, it's what he calls mass formation psychosis. And a couple of things that stood out in that talk are that he encourages, no matter what percentage of people who are free thinking, that they continue to speak out, that they can continue to challenge the sheep mentality. I guess that would be another colloquial way of saying mass formation psychosis. They continue to speak out, and also that if all faith, all energies are put into rational thinking and science, that will continue to perpetuate trouble, because the mystery of life, the spirit of life, cannot be labeled and cannot be boxed and cannot be defined, really. It is a mystery. And if we continue to put things in the rational, totally rational box and try to think that from the age of enlightenment and science that we have figured it all out, we will cause more trouble. So just when you figure it out, there comes a huge monsoon, and when you just figure it out, there comes a blizzard and such like. Now, if you want to go back in history, like Matthias Desmet mentioned, Hannah Arendt, who in 1951 wrote about technocratic totalitarianism. So that's another way you can study the whole topic. And one more along the lines of the mass formation psychosis has to do with the work I've referenced numerous times, because it's very significant, and I do cite it and quote it in my book, the work of Stephen T. Newcomb, from his book and his film. His book is Pagans in the Promised Land, and his film has to do with the doctrine of Christian discovery, which he adds is really about domination and dehumanization. So he is looking at unmasking the domination code. So that goes back to the papal bulls in the 1400s, 1450s, 1490s, into the 1500s, and the mass, what I see as putting in that category, is the mass formation psychosis, is that the whole premise for the settler colonialists coming over to native lands, North America, Turtle Island, is that is all essentially fabricated. It is all an illusion. And he explains it, and there's other books that explain it, that the premise, the whole premise upon which the U.S. was built, is a fabrication. It is built on a perceived and put into legal form a right of domination. And people that came over here, they just took over what was already here. So what gave them that right? Well, according to them, that gets into the documents and the doctrine of the Christian discovery and domination. So it's based on a false presumption. It's like if someone listening decides to take my book and put their name on it. Maybe that's not the best example, but that's what comes to mind now it's my book. Well, no, it isn't. But then if you're out there selling the book and you've sold lots of copies with your name on it, that's a reality, but it's an illusion because it's fake. So that's various ways to look at the whole topic of why do people go along with things that have negative repercussions. In the simplified form, I answer this as long as people have certain benefits and they get something from it, they're willing to overlook atrocities towards others because it's a matter of facing one's discomfort zone, one's fears, and it's lacking empathy and a sense of the whole. So there are many, many explanations, but I think that'll do, and on with the deeper look at nationalism, social status, as explained in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest. Today I'm going to focus on one aspect of my recent book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest. Part of why I'm doing this is because it's a kind of thesis statement having to do with a large topic of U.S. and other history, and not a single person has yet commented on it. So, guess who gets the comment? Now, I'm going to preface this too with it's going to be some challenging stuff, and some people may not like it. Some people may be offended or disagree. So, if your politics is staunchly patriotic or some other such word, and you don't want to hear something that is going to show how that democracy, patriotism, and all that jazz is a veneer, then I suggest you don't listen. That's what I got to say. So I'm going to start off with a quote by Andrei Vlechek, who was an amazing globe-trotting journalist who reported what no one else reported. And I put this quote in my book in a section called Nazis See the World Inverted. Were you ever told, ever, that in the name of that flag consisting of the stars and stripes, tens of millions of people worldwide were murdered, democracies were raped, and freedom of expression horrendously oppressed? So what I did in the book was I figured I would take the soft approach. And Nazi is a loaded term. So instead of trying to say this or that is Nazi, I analyzed it and researched the etymologies and came up with what I think is a valid statement. So, National Socialismus translates from the German into English as National Socialism. That's where the phrase Nazi came from. So those are loaded words. Nation is okay. National becomes more patriotic, and country, rah, rah, rah. The word nation has a positive context because the root is Nasi, G-N-A-S-C-I. I just realized no pun intended there. God, I could have put that in the book. Oh, well. From Gene, G-E-N-E, be born, give birth. Gnatio, Gnation. So that has a positive context, yet, in my opinion, once it gets into the national or the nationalism, then you have the rah-rah for one's country and what is supported is that only those, basically, population growth for those people, whereas it's okay to kill other people. So that's the hypocrisy of nationalism. And then along those lines, actually, the word country comes from the root contra, against, in opposition. So again, it's built in, the language shows how it's built into the very system that countries are going to cause conflict because there is opposition. So look at all the geopolitics, look at all the wrangling going on. It all has to do with opposition and whose begetting of people is better than the others. Social is, you know, you have lunch with someone, it's social. Socialism, that's such a loaded word. People think of communists and other countries. Meanwhile, if the U.S. didn't have socialism, then you wouldn't be a Social Security check. So those are all just, this is like loaded words and loaded topics that take endless analysis and stuff to break it down. So I don't want to get into all that. But I do want to get into simply explaining how what I consider the U.S. to be. And I came up with the nationalism social status. So this is what I wrote. Rather than explore the ramifications of the 20th century German variety of national socialism, this book updates the nomenclature by calling out the current variety as nationalism social status. To what degree a country promotes and exhibits qualities of nationalism social status can be determined on a case-by-case basis. For the purposes of this book, and because it is the variety this traveler has first-hand experience of, what follows is an in-depth look at the nationalism social status of the U.S. Empire. The U.S. Empire variety uses a national identity coupled with a keeping up with the Joneses American dream, a competitive race to achieve social status, along with the illusion of individual identity in a system that thrives on genericizing behaviors, activities, and identities. The hook or bribe consists of comforts and choices, yet with a hidden price tag, the illusion of being free. With globalization and multinational corporations, the national identity is used, U.S. Empire, a little pun there, used as a cover with a purported fervor of patriotism bringing people together while international wheelings and dealings occur and the patriot citizens are left out of the huge profits. As example, in the COVID-19, while 41 million people lost jobs due to COVID, U.S. billionaires grew nearly 500 billion richer. So what I'm saying here is that the nationalism social status, I break it down into shadowy and light. The light is L-I-T-E, because it's not L-I-G-H-T-E, it's a deceptive light, sort of like a product, you know, something without the something in it, so it's light, L-I-T-E.
The light, and the reason why it's, you know, no one's going to call government actions and this and that Nazi is because It's light. Here we have, you know, and people always are defending, oh, but look what we can do in this country. Look what we can do here in this country that you can't do in another country. And yes, I agree. There's a lot of freedoms. There's a certain amount of freedoms to do what you want and say what you want. So I'm not gonna, I don't disagree with that. But it requires looking outside the box of the country. Because the light and all the positives are at the expense of others. That's how I see it. Started off historically, the others were the native and original native peoples. Then the blacks, the African blacks, were dragged over here by chain. And, you know, the other umpteen countries doing slave labor to build our roadways and this and that. Sure, land of opportunity for many, but at the expense of others. So that's what I mean by it's an illusion and it's false. Your bounty is at the expense of someone else's poverty. So that's the light is that, and the light is the way it looks nice.
The light version of the nationalism social status, even though for many years the dominance is the military bases around the world that become sort of out of the conversation, so the seemingly everything is nice, and that becomes the light because it looks nice, but it's, you know, you have to look deeper. But it's not just outside the country, it still is inside the country as well, in the sense of many people also unaware of what is still, you know, especially native people and blacks and minorities still facing biases and racism and environmental racism and trying to protect sacred sites and all that. So it is a two-pronged, you know, outside the so-called country and inside. So the light isn't just, the deception isn't just outside the country. It's really, again, with that sense of the veneer of the national, that picture of the national as the supreme identity. And the socializing that comes with that becomes the veneer when people outside the country are struggling and people inside are struggling as well.
And then the shadowy is the 1,000 military bases that have been going on around the world since, you know, the 40s and 50s and the overthrows of other countries. So here's a horrible statistics that I put in. As this is the result of the global war on terror, which I call the global war of terror, and here's why. As is a quote from a website, as a result, the human cost of the post 9/11 war on terror has been immense. Iraq, 300,000 to 1 million dead. Syria, 400 to 600,000 dead. Afghanistan, 120,000 dead. Libya, 30,000 dead. Pakistan, 50,000 dead. Somalia, unknown. Yemen, 100,000 dead. On the U.S. side, over 7,000 troops have lost their lives in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Pakistan, with more than double that number of private contractors dying in U.S.-led conflicts. And as of 7/21/2021, the total U.S. cost of wars since 2001. Now let's see, I'm not that good at the numbers here. That's millions, that's billion. I guess it's five trillion. 5,420,225,979,472. So you people cite all the six million people that the actual German Nazis killed with the concentration camps. So this is the shadowy side. It's foreign. You don't hear about it much. Gajillions of dollars and hundreds of thousands, millions of dead. If that is not whatever you want to define as Nazi, I don't know what is. You could call it other things. You could call it insane. You could call it, you know, violence on steroids, whatever you want to call it. But that's my thing, my point to make to is here. I'll read my bit in the book. Shadowy side of nationalism, social status. Think outside the country. Seriously, U.S. empire has a long psychotic history of mass murder, typically under the euphemism national security. Yet it is impolite social conversation to raise the topic. And then I follow with the statistics I just read you. Some people, especially those with direct experiences escaping the Nazis of World War II, or with relatives who suffered and may still or lost their lives, may question the nationalism social status comparison and write it off as inaccurate or flimsy at best. Yet this traveler would argue that it is of the utmost significance to consider it as a current manifestation of the vile disregard for life that the German Nazis were known for. Like a view of the valley that you can't see until you reach the mountain peak, you have to see nationalism social status from the global overview perspective, or you won't see it if your vision is bound by nationality or geographical locale. If you're not caring about, not paying attention to how some people over there are being abused, then aren't you, to some degree, participating in the nationalism social status? If you consider your peeps superior because of some attribute, then is that not a form of nationalism social status or Nazi-ism because you don't want to see to helping those other humans being kind struggling? Whether through prayer or direct assistance, at least some form of caring for others as if they were not others is a victory over Nazi-ism and modern-day nationalism social status. If one goes along with the nationalism social status, where is one's allegiance to a flag? What of Mother Earth and of all the natural world? If you are national with a country, can you still respect the original peoples? If social, are your behaviors of a certain kind befitting of accepted social mores and so-called norms? For large masses of people, forms of socialism help, for example, traffic rules and social security payments, yet they are not reflective of intimate culture. Enforced socialism, as in nationalism social status, excludes wildness, spontaneity, and being guided by nature spirit beings. One of the antecedents of Nazism was eugenics. So this is not to pin it on that everything is Nazism, but that goes back more into the eugenics and on and on. So there's a lot of history in my book and in the thesis, and that's literally only one of probably six theses in the book. It's a multi-pronged approach. And the light, I also get into the shadowy light, which I refer to the holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas. You know, Christmas is a chopping down trees to celebrate some people's savior. So you're talking about deforestation for religion. So sure, I celebrate it. I give presents to family. I grew up with it. I have good memories. I have an affinity for what I call true Christ archetype energy. But when I look at it from the nationalism social status perspective, I see that the holiday becomes what is nationally accepted, and the social status is, you know, who can outdo the other with the gifts. And so it becomes a blinder to what else is going on. Same with Thanksgiving. For many, many years, that's been my favorite holiday because there's no gifts and people, it's typically not just family, like anyone, you don't have anywhere to go, come on over. So there's a sort of welcomeness to it. And I think of it as a autumnal harvest get together. But then from the native people's perspective, they have what's called the Day of Mourning because it's not Thanksgiving. And it was originally, there was killings of natives and for which the U.S. was thankful for. That's some of the origin of Thanksgiving. So again, these things are not absolutes, which is part of my book, is a non-dualistic thinking, is to look at things with from a multi-perspective and say that, you know, on the one hand, you have this experience, but look at it, you might have this personal experience, but what about somebody else's experience? Look at it from the overview. So that's how I see it basically with the nationalism social status. It's the country, the nation becomes the supreme entity. Social status creates the wealthy and the poverty. with all the billions, again, going into the wars abroad, like is happening now with Ukraine, while people are starving for food here. So the utter hypocrisy, has me, I just see that and I have to write about it and speak up about it. So if you got this far, I hope what I said made some sense, even if you disagree or you think I'm too far or this or that. But, you know, look at it, to me, it's look at the statistics, look at how people deal with it. Listen to people who suffer or struggle from the consequences of the nationalism social status. If the statistics and the numbers don't show you anything, then find some people and talk to them and learn and do, you know, look up some other research besides mine, because I did a lot of research to get to that point. So may there be peace and well-being. And I seem to always come back to quoting Rodney King, who I had put in one of my other books back in my Musings with the Golden Sparrow book. Same old, as these lines are written, the global corporate empire, the greedy gold diggers, also oil, uranium, coal, diamonds, trying to run the show, but the universal people saying not so fast. So the same old has shifted since 2012, when the Mayan calendar heralded the dawn of an age of the pacha, akin to feminine energy, and toodaloo to the macha, the macho, the male dominators, and welcome the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, a way to all get along and eventually put Rodney King's "Can we all get along?" question to rest. Rodney asked that question, "Can we all get along?" after Empire's police thugs beat the shit out of him in 1991 in the city of Los Angeles. The band-aid hurts as it's being ripped off, but the tide is shifting. Or another way to say it, the shift has hit the fan. So that's been going on for a while. The shift has hit the fan, and I see many people sort of more extreme taking of sides, which is concerning. I think in times of trouble, people kind of go to what they're used to and go to what gives them comfort. So maybe it's time we can get outside the comfort zones and meet halfway in certain cases. So thanks for listening and be well.